and welcome to It's The Vibe, the podcast produced by Talent International and centered around no bullshit conversations with business leaders and innovators where we really dig into all facets of company culture. I'm your host, Ian Tyler. I'm Talent's Group Chief Strategy Officer. So why are we doing this? Well, at Talent, our vision is empowering people to build a better world of work for all and help educate businesses. You know, we're really keen to work with companies and educate businesses, big and small, on how they can actually do their part. We want to share insights and real-life experiences from experts in employee engagement, communication, D&I, and a whole lot more. For today's episode, we're going to be talking about perks and benefits and how do you get it right. I'm joined today by Aoife Fitzmaurice from Sage. And Sage is a global technology company that provides small and medium-sized businesses with software to manage people, finance, and operations. And Aoife is the chief of staff at Sage. She's been there for close to 5 years and has worked across a number of roles within the business. And I'd just like to say a very warm welcome to you, Aoife.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Indeed.
So, conversation.
Yeah, likewise. I would like to start with firstly understanding your role, the chief of staff. You know, that's becoming a much more popular title that you're seeing within businesses, certainly over the last few years. And tell us about your role and how you kind of got there.
So I guess I've had a bit of a squiggly career. I joined Sage about 5 years ago, and I was then a business executive, which is kind of like a junior chief of staff to our now CEO. I worked in that role for a few years. Then I got interested in an operating model transformation, so moved to the transformation space. And then I got the opportunity to be chief of staff to our CPO, Amanda Custon. So I started that role in January, and I sort of have three hats in that role. So I have my chief of staff hat, which means you're the eyes, the ears, you're the confidant, you're the person who goes in if there's a fire drill. But then I also have my kind of future workplace and my org design hat. And then future workplace is all about joining that workplace, designing that workplace of the future, which hopefully we'll get into. And the org design piece is kind of driving effectiveness and kind of, yeah, basically effectiveness in our organizational shape and just driving intentional org design and working with the business.
Fantastic. Really, really interesting. And that finance background, certainly as organizations continue to change and look at hybrid solutions and understand, you know, cost implications of people having this hybrid work, and then also in understanding how organizations can embrace people and support people in that type of working environment. You know, accountants say we've got all this money focused on all these expensive assets that are buildings and leases and things, and, you know, but how do we provide something to people and our staff and our teams around the world that gives them that flexibility when they're not actually there that much in this kind of new way of working? It's an interesting one. It's an interesting conundrum.
It is. I think the world has changed in the last 18 months, and I think our context as individuals has also changed, which means employers have to change too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, we're going to have a conversation about perks and benefits. And a couple of years back, I wrote a blog and a little post, and it was talking about perk fatigue. And perk fatigue being that, you know, it's not all about the ping pong table. The era of the ping pong table is kind of dead, or certainly dying. I'm curious to kind of get a little bit of insight from you, if you will, or feedback around, you know, what do you say to that? You know, it's not all about the ping pong table, is it?
No, it's definitely not. I think you have to reflect a little bit on what has happened, particularly in the last 18 months. I think people are individuals. There are, you know, they're the mom, they're the carer, they're the dad, they're family first, and then they're the employee. And so therefore, how companies react to that and how they set up that colleague experience and the perks that they provide needs to also shift. And I think more and more, people want to connect with something bigger, so that company purpose. They want to feel like they're making a difference. We know that kind of flexibility is becoming one of the most valued benefits. And we also know that in terms of kind of propensity to change employer who you're working for, a lot of people will consider changing employer if they don't feel like they have that flexibility. So I think with perks, it has to be relevant. It has to recognize an individual's context. So they have to have choice, because you cannot have a one size fits all. And then it's also about kind of how do you help people manage that balance between work and home life through kind of more flexible options, and also the well-being piece that comes in as well.
Yeah, I mean, the well-being factor is it's of significant importance. Companies big and small, the people are really recognizing that doing the right thing, being there to support people in the context of work and also in the context of their home life, certainly with the way that we've all had to work, and you know, time at work bleeds into home life even more so today than ever before, you know. So getting that balance of what is a benefit and what is a perk when you're supporting people in that environment is really tricky. What's table stakes? What's a baseline expectation? It's an interesting one, certainly as we move forward into what is, you know, this kind of the future of work being now, because I'm kind of a little bit overhearing about the future of work. It's kind of like, whatever, we're in it, we're living it, so let's just kind of crack on. It's quite interesting. I'd like to kind of talk to you about this notion of future workplaces. And, you know, when you think about your role, as you've kindly shared with us, you know, you've got this lens of the world. So just talk to us a little bit about that. What is it specifically that you're looking at, and how do you bring that to life for the business?
When we think about future workplace, I think it's all about kind of redesigning work to focus on really outcomes, to focus on sustainable productivity, so that underpin of well-being. So like any athlete, you know, our the colleagues at Sage and in every organization, they need downtime. And I think we probably forgot that years ago. And now with more flexibility, those boundaries are becoming blurred. So for us at Sage, we've been really intentional over the last 18 months to kind of to listen to our colleagues in what matters to them as we kind of go into this next phase. And number one, what mattered to them was flexibility. And so we co-designed with our colleagues kind of our approach to hybrid. And that is essentially giving you flexibility of where you work, but also when you work. And we're kind of doubling down on that when at the moment, so that flex of time. And I'm actually running some pilots to really, really scale flex of time. So designing in job shares, when we go to kind of set up job design for different roles, how can we kind of scale part-time working? Because there's so much demand and there's so much benefit, both for the colleague and the organization of doing this, that we just can't ignore it, if you know what I mean. What was a differentiator pre-pandemic is now kind of table stakes, as you say.
I think so. So when you think about all of those elements, and you think about the couple of the other things we touched on earlier about that wellness component and connection and purpose, and you think about the type of flexibility that are afforded, how do businesses maintain connection and culture when there is this kind of significant amount of flexibility, where both to your point of where and when people are working?
Yeah, you know, this is not an easy balance to get right. I need to go back to tell you how we're approaching it, I guess. So we have co-designed with colleagues a flexible human work framework, which is essentially how we operate hybrid. And we have four key principles that we set in that framework that guide our decisions around how we want to work in the future. They go from kind of performance for customers, fairness and trust, experimentation. But one principle is human connection. So finding that balance for us is about understanding how work gets done, forming team agreements about where and when we'll work, that really put that human connection, that sense of inclusion, recognizing that, yes, we want flexibility, but how we come together as humans matters. And recognizing also that our kind of distributed networks has suffered, and that we all have to be a lot more intentional. So we're kind of, we're almost on that journey as an organization where we're trying to find that norm of hybrid. We're very much doing it in an experimental way. We won't get this all right, but it's about teams aiming for that one great day together in the office, and then maybe progressing from there. And what works for one team won't work for another. So it's really hard for, I think, to look at this at the organizational level. I think you need to go down to the team level, and we really empowered our leaders and our colleagues to do that together. And it's exciting to watch, definitely, as we go back and kind of COVID restrictions are removed and we're testing that out in the UK now. I'm excited to see. We only currently at the moment have about 10% of colleagues going into the office. And we do know that we're missing that sense of fun and spontaneity. So it's something that I'll continue to focus on and work with leaders and colleagues and educate them about as we go through the next year, really.
I'm curious. I mean, what's your view on this as a statement that I think the whole world of work at the moment is in a very big opportunistic experimental phase?
Absolutely. So that is how we're approaching it. It is one big experiment, and I spent hours with the top 40 execs getting them comfortable with this notion of, look, this is how we used to work. And they recognized up front, right, people are not going to come in and sit anywhere 9 to 5. But having comfort in that ambiguous kind of place of where will we be in 10 months? How will I get to keep the team together if it's not mandated? You know what I mean? So it's just an experiment, and it is all about that trust, that focus on outcomes, that focus on human connection, and underpinned by very intentional and thoughtful leadership. Because to get this right, it takes a lot of planning and a lot of investment and a lot of honest conversation.
Yeah, I think the leadership factor on that, I think, is really interesting, because there's demographics. And where I'm going with this is when you think about, again, this the world of work that we're in right now, and this experimental phase and this hybrid way of working, overlay that with an unprecedented level of four generations in the workplace that have got different levels of wants, needs, and expectations. When you think about the leadership layer of that, which are typically, certainly from an executive level of a FTSE listed organization such as Sage, there are demographics at play there that say, this is not how we do things. This isn't how stuff gets done. It's that trust that you talk about. It's that experimental. That would be really challenging, right? Really challenging. People have got to really lean into that and go, okay, I'm going to trust it. Have you seen any pushback on any of that?
I think it's because we invested so much up front in doing this, right? And it wasn't pushback, because people know they have to do it. But we did a lot of testing as we designed our framework. So it wasn't pushback. It's more nervousness around, okay, suddenly the accountability now for kind of pushing this rests with me and not with the kind of the top. Can you not just tell everyone that they need to be in, because it makes my life easier? But actually, I think hybrid working is so linked to the way your company operates, your culture, your values. And we're all about doing the right thing, kind of having accountability, transparency. And that's really how I think we've been able to do this effectively so far at Sage, because there is that trust, there's empowerment, and there's that safe space where colleagues feel they can call out when they don't feel it's fair. And fairness is a big part of our framework as well that we put a lot of thought in, because again, the equity in this workplace is so important, and something that we need to continue to focus on, particularly around presenteeism and things like that.
It's a fantastic point. I just want to quickly circle back slightly on this notion of well-being in the environment, and kind of understand from your perspective, from the Sage lens, how How do you incorporate development and well-being in this type of environment, this type of working environment, into your way of working at Sage? I'm curious, what could listeners take from this that Sage do to actually say, you know what, we incorporate professional and personal development as well as well-being to our people?
So, yeah, I think, how would I articulate this in the best way? So I think like the gold standard ultimately for approaching hybrid working puts sustainable high performance that's focused on outcomes front and center, and that's underpinned by development for colleagues. And that means that colleagues can show up to be their best, most productive selves ultimately in the long term. And we've designed that kind of way of thinking into the principles that are set out on our framework of how we make choices around kind of hybrid ways of working. And I think also the latest kind of thinking and organizational well-being, you need to approach the job holistically. So how we're doing it at Sage is we're looking at how we can redesign job to support kind of well-being and energy. Okay. And it's not just about the elastoplast of solutions ultimately that are like, you know, the free gym or the free lunch. You need to go deeper than that. You know, it's systemic, and you need to really address the root of the issue. So I think the company or the organization has a massive accountability at the individual level for well-being and development that's highly personable, and that people should feel like they have ownership over it. But I also feel at the same time that individuals themselves need to be accountable for owning their own well-being whilst they have been kind of given the optionality, and also their development whilst being given the optionality of what they want to pull from a development perspective. So I see it as very two-way. You have to create the conditions and the foundations, and that's your kind of responsibility as an organization. But then colleagues also have a role to play in this. And I think that's really, really going to be increasingly important as we go forward.
It's interesting, you know, because there's still the elements of the table stake conversation of the things that will be there, the free lunch that we kind of touched on, that you just touched on before. There are those kind of superfluous types of benefits that the organizations expect, but I think there's certainly a dial, a change that's being moved right now toward this kind of purpose, vision, flexible well-being. When you think about all of that, it's all about putting almost like the sounds very cliche, but the human back into human resources. It's very much centered on people, heads, hearts, and minds. And it's interesting because I think it's been coming for a while, and I think the world in which we've just all gone through for the last 18 months around the world has just made that, it's kind of expedited it significantly. And I think it's a wonderful thing. I'm conscious I'm bouncing around a little bit, but just when I'm listening to you talk, I find it quite intriguing. And there's 4-day work week. Do you see that as a perk, a benefit, an experiment, or something that we should just all lean into?
So this is really interesting, actually. So at Sage today, 5% of our current colleague base work part-time, and that's everything from job share compressed, so the 4-day working week, through to part-time hours. And the next part of our flexible human work kind of rollout, and what we're piloting at the moment, is all about designing in flex of time options at the point of role design. And we are testing, and we have in the business what we call a compressed role. So the job design itself would warrant a 5-day working week, but colleagues have asked, could they do this in a 4-day working week? And I think, I think more flexibility, the better for people, and people need to deliver on the outcome set and the objective set in their role. So I sit on the fence a little bit, because when you have teams that are working 5 days a week doing the similar kind of role, and you have someone doing it in 4 days, there is that sense of inequity that we need to be mindful of. But at the same time, people and studies have proven that in 4 days, people can do the work of five, you know? So we haven't, as an organization, stood up and say we're stopping compressed hours, because we're actually just experimenting with it a little bit to see where we go. And I think kind of in our, we have loads of colleagues that deal direct with our customers. And for them, compressed hours is actually great because they work kind of hourly shifts. I think for the knowledge worker, it becomes a little bit more difficult. And that sense of equity across a team becomes a little bit more difficult to keep the balance. If everybody's on the 4 day week, it's fine, right?
Well, exactly.
Some and some others, I think you just need to be very mindful of how you manage that and as a team openly discuss it.
These are all very interesting topics, right? If you think about everything that we've touched on, and you go put the clock back 5 years, the boardroom conversation about all of this stuff, do you think it was, it would have been a, you guys are all gone mad. What on earth are you thinking about? It's interesting, right? It's really interesting.
I know it is, but you know what? I think you can do anything if you prove your way with data. And we proved our way with data in this one at Sage. And nobody could argue, you know, we need to do this. And when I think about our next journey, about really enabling full flex of time, not just place, and organizations, I think, are quite short-sighted on this still. I have been quite surprised at how some of the more traditional leaders in the business are so open to this. The likes of kind of job share is an amazing way to progress in a senior role on a part-time basis. And we just don't see enough of it. And it's like there's so much proof that it's a really great way to retain colleagues, and that 71% of job sharers go on to promotion, and that job share is average 2 years duration, and it supports someone when they need more flexibility. So we're trying to almost go on this like cultural shift at Sage to support our new ways of working. And I've been amazed and really excited by just the degree of motivation to want to make this work from all our senior leaders.
Yeah, the openness and willingness to lean into something like this. I think it's bold. You've got to be really brave. You've got to have good discipline, because these are the other things that people forget. Going to a 4 day week, or going to the, you know, success from anywhere kind of notion, it requires discipline and requires governance. Absolutely. As much as it sounds like it probably doesn't, but actually probably more so.
Absolutely. And we've done a lot of research into the kind of area of part-time working and the key attributes of people that can be successful, more so from a job share perspective, but I think the same could be applied on a 4 day working week, are the same attributes of high performers. So I think, you know, regardless of how you're working, you need to have a focus on outcomes. And if you have that kind of mindset across a team, that then unlocks the different flexible options for you. I really think, you know, I can't imagine us ever going back to that 9 to 5, 5 days a week. I haven't done it for many years, if I'm being honest.
Well, I'm kind of the same. I think mine's more like 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. 6 days a week. So, but that's a different story. I'm just teasing. I want to ask you a quick question on that, actually, because I agree with you that the 9 to 5 notion is kind of out the door now, but by and large, in most industries. But given, you know, we're talking about perks and benefits, how to get it right, and thinking about balance, is everything that we're talking around flexibility, success from anywhere, and this experiment, the great experimentation that's going on, is flexible working and job share and all these type of things, are they perks and benefits, or are they, as we've touched on before, just table stakes and expectations now?
They're absolutely table stakes. You know, like, absolutely they are. I think it's like paying someone to do a job. You know what I mean? You ultimately have to pay someone to do the job. I see flexible options in the same bucket as that, to be honest. That's how I view it. That is the way the world has changed.
I agree with you. However, given the myriad of conversations I have with different levels of leader, manager, individual contributor, I think we're going to get this sense of, certainly if I look at it from a global perspective and then focus on different regions where I interact globally, I agree. You get into different types of companies or service industry, and they're not quite there yet. I think that they're going to get this sense of, right, we can all get back in the office, so let's do that. And I think it will be a wonderful couple of days or even a couple of weeks. But then that natural vibe of, I have been successful whilst working from home, and I don't have to do an hour commute, and that is saving me money. And that is a real perk and a benefit, because that's when it becomes a perk and a benefit to that individual. But I don't believe that organizations should be thinking flexible working is a perk or a benefit to your point. I think it's an expectation. So I find it interesting, because there are some businesses that I've spoken to, businesses that go, no. When we are through this pandemic, everybody's back in the office. It's going to be great.
Do you know what? I just don't buy that. I was reading the newspaper yesterday, and they were worrying about a shortage of bankers, because we know that banking is one of those traditional industries where you have to go in. And I do think there's a cultural piece to this. So in Asia, we know that people generally live in smaller accommodation. It's quite hierarchical still. There's probably that piece around presenteeism. So they're starting to go back to the office more. So I think we're on a journey, but I also think there's a lot of research done in the space that points to that kind of propensity to switch employer at the moment. Mm. And colleagues will walk, you know what I mean? Because I think individuals now have expectations around that balance and what's important to them that they potentially didn't have before. And maybe in 5 to 10 years, that will just be washed away and we all back on that kind of treadmill of jumping on a tube every day. But I'm not so sure.
Yes, same. I'm certainly with you on that one. Let's just talk a little bit now about Sage and some of the things that you do over and above. I mean, I did a bit of research and can see that, you know, as an organization, you've won some pretty cool and interesting awards as a business. When I look at, Employee Benefits Awards winner in October 2020 and 2021 Glassdoor Best Place to Work, you guys are kind of getting it right. So for those listeners out there that are still kind of maybe running smaller businesses or thinking about going from their 50 to 200 employee growth and those scale-ups, what would some of the kind of key takeaways or pieces of advice that you would kind of want to offer some of the listeners that are on that journey of saying, we need to really look at this, we need to think about these perks and benefits that we can give our people? And what would some of those kind of key takeaways or recommendations be?
Do you know what? I think I'll bring in a bit of what I learned when I was that business executive to our CEO when he started at Sage. So I think number one, you have to be clear about like what you're about as a company, like what is that core purpose and how do people connect to that? And that narrative needs to be kind of front and center, because you can be giving them anything. They need to understand that and want that and go to above and beyond for your customer or your mission. Mm. I think secondly, it's all about the values which you lead and through all your that guides your colleagues' behaviors and your leaders' behaviors ultimately. And we co-designed our values with our colleagues a few years ago. And that's so important. And then I think it's all about listening. We have an always listening survey. We run pulse surveys. We listen and we inform our kind of people strategy and our broader strategy by what colleagues are telling us. So we've made some really, really great progress in kind of improving that colleague experience, putting DEI on the very front and center of our agenda, embedding well-being and how we redesign work, but also in providing those kind of those benefits that people might need at different stages of their life and wrapping optionality around that, giving them kind of opportunities for development and making it available, but putting that sense of individual responsibility and accountability on the individual to kind of go and take that up as well. So I think it's just being clear on that purpose, that vision, those values that guide you day after day, and then listening to your colleagues, recognizing it cannot be a one size fits all in the world in which we live today, and that optionality for people is so important.
Yeah, I'd summarize that in not so eloquently, but go and give your people a bloody good listening to. And if you're going to do that and they're going to tell you things, and then it's on us as leaders of businesses that shape that conversation and that organization to ensure that we kind of give people what they want and what they need, you know. It's really interesting. And yeah, I'm very grateful that you've summarized it in such an eloquent way. When you think about all those things, the things that are relevant, if you will, I don't think there's anything that you've said there that will never in the future be irrelevant. Because when you think about the notion of ping pong or free bus to work or food in the office, yeah, nice. Is it really going to be that relevant in the future? Probably not. And I think that's where the organizations that have done the gimmicks and the trinkets, and they're going to come unstuck if they haven't got those other core fundamental elements right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we're a tech company, but we probably don't have all the gimmicky perks of the other tech companies, if that makes sense. We're born and bred, you know, in Newcastle. So I think that sets a different tone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would like to say a huge thank you. You've been amazingly gracious with your time. I thoroughly enjoyed this. We could talk for hours, I feel. I just want to say a massive thank you.
Thank you.
And yeah, it's been a great discussion. I think the way that you've been able to articulate what you're doing at Sage, which from my perspective are things that business all over the world should be embracing. So you know, credit to you for doing that and being right at the tip of the spear on kind of leading that. So I congratulate you for that, and I thank you so much. I'd just like to say to our listeners out there, but thank you very much for tuning in. Aoife, thank you very much for your time and investing
that. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, it really has. I'd like to think that some of our listeners have got some great takeaways and insights that have been gathered that they can just apply back in their businesses. So if you'd like to know more or hear any more about these types of conversations, you can get in touch with us at Talent's website at www.talentinternational.com. Or you can reach out to us on LinkedIn. So without any further ado, Aoife, thank you very much, and I will speak to you soon.
Thank you.